So I have two little homilies to share with you today. And the first one is about Earth Day, but you know, I was also thinking, I mean, say candy to me and I just keep thinking about it. And so I was thinking about those chocolate eggs. And what it's like when you're in an egg hunt and you're looking around and you move aside a tuft of grass and there's an egg, a chocolate egg. Or you look under a bush and there's a plastic egg full of stickers. And it's like there's these little wonderful prizes everywhere. Well, there's a word for that. There's a long word for that. And it's called abundance. That sense that the world, our lives are full of wonders, and wherever we turn, look at that. Like we just saw with all those wonderful wonders of the earth in that beautiful book. There's a favorite author of mine who lives around here, Rebecca Solnit, who writes about this. She writes a lot about how can we take care of the earth. And she says, you know, people keep talking about climate change, like in order to take care of the earth, we're going to have to give up all these things. That's called austerity, living very slim. Oh, I can't do this, and I can't do that, and I can't use my car, and I can't buy something because that's bad for the earth. And so it feels like giving up, giving up, giving up. She says, I think we're thinking about it all wrong. She says, what if the austerity is how we live right now, and the abundance could be what's to come? And I think she's really right about that, partly because we worry right now, right? We look around, all of us who love the earth and all of us who know what we need to do to take care of it, we live with this burden of worry, and that's not a good way to live. But also, when I think about what has brought people abundance over our history, it doesn't actually interfere with the wonderful workings of this beautiful planet and keeping it healthy. And I'm gonna give us all a chance to think about what we each mean by abundance and how we notice it in our lives. But first, I wanna tell you what I mean about that. Like, if you look at the whole history of human beings, it's only been a handful of generations since long after the Industrial Revolution that we actually felt like, oh, what we're doing is having such an impact on the planet that we need to change it. We were not having that much of an impact on the planet. And we, all that time, until that started to happen just 4 or 5 generations ago, people lived with great abundance. They didn't feel like, oh, life is so difficult. I can't enjoy anything because I can't drive here or there, or, you know, buy something that's wrapped in plastic or whatever, because they didn't have any cars and they didn't have stuff wrapped in plastic. Now, there were things that were hard about life then. For example, most of the diseases that that we can cure now, people just died of them then. They didn't have antibiotics. Do you know that the millions of people who died in the plague, they say probably 1/3 of the people in Europe alone died in the plague in the 14th century? Do you know what cures the plague? Penicillin. Okay, very simple antibiotics. They just didn't know about it. They didn't know how to find it and treat that disease. So, okay, so life was very bad in certain ways like that, and it's gotten much better. But you know, those things don't have any climate impact. We don't have to give up treatment of diseases and vaccines and all those great things that we have to live longer, healthier lives in order to take care of this planet. Isn't that great? Not a cost at all. So what is it that has changed? Well, we seem to want things to be convenient. We seem to want things to be wrapped in plastic. I know I keep coming back to that, but it's very recent that we wrap everything in plastic. I mean, my grandmother didn't live in that world, and I'm not that old. So when we think, oh my goodness, we can't go back there without giving up so much, you know, people lived perfectly happily in that world. It's not actually austerity. What's austerity is having these piles and piles of stuff. Tim, could you show that picture of the grocery store? Like, you know, you go to a grocery store now, certainly if you, you know, shop down the middle, right, instead of around the edge, and everything's wrapped and wrapped and wrapped. And, you know, it didn't used to be that way. Would it really be such a sacrifice to say, we're not going to do it that way anymore? We're not going to necessarily transport all our food, all these distances. We could do it a different way. Here's another picture in the next one. I start to get depressed now when I go to grocery stores. What I feel like feels like abundance, even though it seems much simpler and like it doesn't have so much stuff. You can't just reach out on a shelf and get, ooh, that box of donuts, ooh. Is this picture, this next one. You know, when I go to a farmer's market, don't you, and I hear it around, don't you feel like this is what I want? This is my community. These are farmers coming directly to us from much closer and selling the food and everything. Now, I'm not saying we could get back to, you know, it won't always be that simple. We won't get rid of packaging and trucking and everything altogether. But there have been so many changes in such a short amount of time that we could roll back without suffering so much because, in fact, it would put us more in touch with things like the farmer's market, with things like gathering around and being with the people we love than anything, any climate change hastening activities can do. So I thought we'd just think a little bit about what abundance feels like to each of us. So another way of thinking about abundance is when you feel like you have plenty, when you feel like you're just so happy, like, ah, there's nothing that needs to happen to improve the way I feel right this moment. I like everybody to just shut their eyes and just think about what are some of those experiences for you. What feels like abundance for you? Now, I wish we had time for everybody to share all these with everyone, but while you're watching the kids look for candy, or when you're going home with your family after the service, you could share some of the things you thought of. Maybe some things like time to be creative, the times that you're making music with somebody you care about, or making art. Time to be with the people you love, gathered around a table where you like all the food and you like the people. So here's I think, a big secret to abundance. And I've told the adults this story, but I don't think the kids were in the room when I told this story before. This is from a writer and a Unitarian named Kurt Vonnegut. And he told this story specifically to people much younger than him. He said, "My uncle Alex, who is up in heaven now," he said, "one of the things he found objectionable about human beings was that they so rarely noticed it when times were sweet. We could be drinking lemonade in the shade of an apple tree in the summertime, and Uncle Alex would interrupt the conversation to say, 'If this isn't nice, what is?'" And so, Kurt Vonnegut said, "I hope you will do the same for the rest of your lives. When things are going sweetly and peacefully, please pause a moment and then say out loud, 'If this isn't nice, what is?'" Now, that's abundance. That's a wonderful gift we can give ourselves and that the earth gives us all the time and that we can give back to the earth. To just notice what's beautiful. Like, we've just found a chocolate egg under a bush. Oh my gosh! Look at that bird's nest. If that isn't nice, what is? Look at the dawn rising, like Thoreau said. You know, the dawn comes every day. Look at that. Look at the sun coming up and dawn coming over the world. If that isn't nice, what is? Look at the waves coming in. How wonderful. See how nature repairs and heals itself and us. Isn't that fabulous? What abundance we have within us and all around us. And we can help each other just to notice it by saying, let's say it together, if this isn't nice, what is? So Christmas is Jesus' birthday. So Easter is his rebirth day. Now, not his death, he died on Friday, which people call Good Friday for some reason. I guess because they knew he was going to come back. You know, it's a really odd thing about Jesus. I of course, have heard this story. And here and there in the Gospels, in the stories of Jesus' life, he will say that 3 days after he dies, he will be resurrected. He'll be born again, and he'll go on living. And of course, like Kat was just saying, that's so much what we long for when somebody that we love dies. We wish that they were still here. We wish we could talk to them and hear them laugh. And we want them to be with us forever and not be gone. But then there was this Easter miracle. People went to the tomb where Jesus had been put after he died on the Friday. And the stone, this huge stone, had been rolled away and there was no body inside. But then what's always struck me as strange is that he didn't stick around. Like, there are these stories about how people saw him and talked to him even, but then apparently he went up to heaven, maybe body and all, that's part of the story that some people believe. But in any case, he didn't live forever. He didn't stay on earth, which is kind of what you want, right, when somebody you love dies. So what's going on there? Well, I think, personally, the Unitarian Universalists have a real piece of wisdom about this. For a long time, I think it was an old Unitarian preacher who said, you know, we don't want to be the religion about Jesus. We want to practice the religion of Jesus. So we can focus a lot on what happened to Jesus, and did he go right up to heaven, and is he coming back one day, and all that kind of stuff. But that seems to be about him. And from what we know about Jesus, which, you know, admittedly is a little patchy, we don't know which pieces of the Gospels are true, although it seems like some of them are probably pretty good accounts of something that actually happened there in the first century in what's now Palestine and Israel. We don't know a lot, but from what we know about Jesus, this man, we know a lot of things that he said about how he lived and how he thought everyone should live. And those weren't all that focused on him. They were focused on how we treat each other. So it's like he was thinking about this. He thought, you know, you're all following me and things are not looking so good. I'm getting in trouble with very, very powerful people, the religious authorities, and the entire Roman Empire here in this part of the world. Don't want to mess with them. Here's things I want you to know after I'm gone. Here's what we're doing now that I hope everybody will keep doing. And that was his way, not only of keeping his memory alive, but more saying, hey, this is what I'm trying to teach you. We can keep practicing this. We can keep teaching it to other people and making this kind of world. So the night before he died, yes, he had this big meal. They came into Jerusalem. They had a meal that was probably a Seder. It says in the Bible that in the Gospels that this was a Passover. And sure enough, Easter is set to take place at Passover every year. Okay, so being Jewish, they had this big meal. And they had traveled a long way. Some of them on a donkey, like Jesus. A lot of them walking. When a tall man, or not even a very tall man, rides a donkey, his feet are so close to the ground, he could almost be walking. And you probably know what Jesus and his disciples wore on their feet. Any ideas? maybe sandals, if anything, right? Like, you know, so, okay, you're walking a long way on these roads before asphalt and everything, and maybe riding a donkey, and you're wearing sandals or bare feet. Your feet get really, really dirty. They are dusty. They are filthy. And so here's what Jesus did. After the meal, he took off his outer robe, and he wrapped a big towel around his waist like an apron, and he went to each one of his disciples, and he kneeled down in front of them, just like this, so he could get at their feet, like this. Now, I'm the teacher, right? I'm the one who people are calling master and rabbi and teacher, and I'm kneeling down. And he did that to each of his disciples, and he gently washed their feet. Oh, it must have felt so good, these dusty, dirty feet, and the cool water from the basin that Jesus held, and then he gently dried them off with a towel, and then he went on. 12 times he did this with each of his disciples. And some people still celebrate this on what's called Maundy Thursday, 2 days, 3 days before Easter. So when they said to him, "What are you doing? You're washing my feet, Master," he said, "This is what we do for one another. I am serving you. I am taking care of you. So please take care of each other." And of course, he didn't just mean these 12 people. He meant take care of everybody. Take care of everybody. So this was Jesus' form of abundance. You know, he didn't say in that moment, even in most of the gospel accounts, he didn't say, "Oh, don't worry, I'll always be here to wash your feet." Not at all. It wasn't that kind of abundance. It wasn't the "I'm going to live forever" abundance, don't worry about anything. It was, we're always here to take care of each other. And as long as we show love and care to each other, we will always have that sense of plenty, enough, abundance. So that's how we can celebrate Easter. This rebirthday is by rebirthing love in us as we care for one another and the earth, everybody we meet, in the spirit of this wonderful teacher who gave us so much sense of the abundance of love.